Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. Should India's armed forces shun imported weapons and equipment and only buy locally? In a recent interview, the Chief of Defence Staff, General Bipin Rawat, had said, and I quote, we should not go in for large amounts of imports by misrepresenting our operational requirements, end quote. A major issue that General Rawat was alluding to was the General Staff Qualitative Requirements, or the GSQRs. And these provide the rationale for why certain hardware is needed, the operational matters involved, and so on. To discuss the role of GSQRs in arms imports and whether import substitution and buying locally is actually the way to go for the armed forces, I have with me General Prakash Menon. Welcome, General.
Thank you.
Just to orient all of us, I just want to start with, what is a GSQR, General? Why does it matter?
Okay, so GSQR stands for General Staff Qualitative Requirements. And it is called GSQR by the Army. The Air Force calls it Air Staff Qualitative Requirement. The Navy also does the same. So essentially, it means that if you want to buy arms or equipment, you have to enunciate what is you expect that the function of this arms and equipment is supposed to fulfill. So let's take an example of a rifle. So you have to say that you need a rifle which should be effective against a particular type of target, up to a particular range. So you specify the range, 300, 400, 500 meters. Then you can say that it should not weigh more than so and so. It should be able to fire so many rounds per minute. It should have night firing capability in complete darkness, and so on. So you finally say that this is your minimum requirement which it has to fulfill. And it is converted into technical parameters. But essentially, it is so that the person who is interested will be able to know what is it that you want. So this comes from the user, but it is not completely derived from the user, because the user might want the moon, which may not be available either globally or indigenously. It's not there. So you have to actually relate this to availability. And therefore, you will carry out a search as what is available globally, what can you do internally, and so on. And then you formulate it. So there is a process of formulating it. And that's done by the user being the center. But it's also done by other agencies who will be involved, like the DRDO, even the private sector. So a GSQR formulation is a fairly established process, and it's not only the user who is involved in it, it is also involved other agencies when before it is finally approved. So that's what a GSQR is.
Right. You brought up rifles as an example. India has actually struggled until recently to basically figure out what rifles it wants to arm its soldiers with. And I remember seeing the GSQR from several years back, and I couldn't think of a single existing rifle that met any of those requirements. So is it true that is General Rawat onto something when he says that sometimes these GSQRs can be overambitious?
Well, that has been our experience, although it is not always the case, but it is not uncommon. But I think we are now reached some sort of a stage by which asking for the moon will not pass the test and the steps through which we are putting the GSQR process through. And now we have introduced another aspect to it, that even after the GSQR is formulated and somebody has produced it, and once you produce it, you have to send it through a system of trials. And if during those trials it is found that for certain issues it does not meet the GSQR, there is now another committee, another mechanism which can approve it based on what they think is within acceptable parameters. So this is something which was there, it was not being used so much, but now it's in the new DPP, it has been defined. The problem is that we are not very sure whether we can produce it. We are not very sure whether somebody else can produce it, but that does not mean that we should accept something because we can't produce something else. And that is where one has objection to what the CDS says. Because his argument is that even if it is only 70%, but as long as we accept this, we use it, we learn more from it, so we can improve on this version and go down the line, we can actually find that our indigenous capability would have improved. There is an argument here. And let's take the LCA for that matter. That the LCA is now, not that it's completely indigenous, it doesn't have, it has to have an engine which is imported, but at least it is something we have been able to now come out with a fighter aircraft. If we know that whatever might be the case, we must be able to produce our own aircrafts, fighters, transport, and so on. And the engine has been a major stumbling block. So unless you give our institutions orders to keep manufacturing, keep designing and improving, you will never have the indigenous capacity with us. So based on that, there is an argument that you should sometimes accept for less. But this is an argument which has to be seen to be applied on a case-to-case basis, that we are now accepting this primarily because we believe that once we do that, we would learn from its usage and we would improve it. And this would apply to all those equipments for which technology will never be given to us. You know, you might buy equipment from outside, but they never give you the technology because that is actually IPR. And if you're buying from the Western world, those companies would never part with the IPR. Why would they? And therefore, we have to be careful of how we apply what the CDS is saying. It cannot possibly apply to everything else. It has to be selectively applied.
What you're saying is that this can't be a general rule, buy locally. But Jana, what are the implications of buying locally and say downgrading the GSQRs, buying equipment that is not up to our standards? What effect does that have on our defense preparedness?
Oh, yes. That's actually a very interesting question. And it's a very important question. Let us have no doubts that military power is applied in a contested atmosphere. That there is an adversary or a group of adversaries on the other side. So the technology which you have can be contested. And therefore, a person with a superior technology always have a better chance of winning the battle. May not be the war, because if technology was the only reason for deciding wars, then the Americans would not be actually withdrawing from Afghanistan. The most superior nation in the world has actually been practically defeated by very inferior technology. So, but they never hardly ever lost a battle, but they're losing the war, because a war is much more than about how force is applied. It is also about people. It is also about culture. It is also about terrain, and it is also about technology. But technology is not sole. But technology is important. So when you are actually shaping the military instrument, and especially that this applies more, much more than to land forces than to air and the Navy, where they operate in geographies where technology keeps them either afloat or in the air. And in these two domains, or even in space, technology plays a much major role than what it does for land forces, because land forces primarily depend upon human agency, which operate on terra firma, which is the Mother Earth. So technology for the Air Force and the Navy is extremely important. The room for compromise for them is much less than what it is for the Army. And therefore, there is no reason why, as a policy, you should have ever think of compromise in technology just because you are not able to produce it indigenously. Because it's got another issue here. There are some items which are easily available off the shelf. It is much cheaper to buy it from abroad than it is to produce here because you don't have the economy of scale. So put a blanket ban on import. And I think this 200 crore, which has been done yesterday, troubles me for the defense sector, because if it is applied, there are certain things which we need to buy from, let's say, for the special forces from abroad. It will be much less than 200 crores. So we should concentrate internally on developing those technologies which nobody will ever give you. Technology which is available off the shelf, it is much easier to buy. After we have bought it, we can think of producing it. But as far as preparations are concerned, there is no need to reinvent the wheel because it's readily available. And therefore, when we have fashioned our policy, we must now shift. And there is reason that the budgets are going to be cut. How much the cut is not very clear. That we need to be careful about how much we're getting from abroad, how much we can produce. But the unfortunate part is that if we can unleash India's private sector potential into the defense industrial base, if we can wither away the entrenched positions of public sector units, then only that space can actually, you can allow space for the private sector. Right now, despite every effort by the government, it has not been possible to do that. And I think there is a structural issue here. And that structural issue is to do with the fact that the PSUs and the Ordnance Factory and so on, who are the producers, are under the Ministry of Defense Production. If we move this under the Ministry of Industries, there would probably be a level playing field for the private sector. So it is not that India does not have the capacity. We are not utilizing that capacity fully. That there is truism there. But to think that we should utilize it by lowering the GSQR is dangerous, unacceptable, and it's a very short-term, myopic view which we should not indulge.
Yeah, so what you're saying is broadly that, A, we should think about this sourcing locally on a case-by-case basis. We should focus on developing technologies at home which are denied to us, or which may be emerging technologies, rather than reinventing the wheel with some pre-existing technology. And three, you're saying we should unleash the private sector in this. Is that broadly correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, here's, if I'm wearing General Rawat's hat, here's the objection I will throw in, which is that, our defense budget is under huge strain. We spend most of our money servicing pensions right now. We don't have much money for capital expenditure. And now you have this global pandemic, our economy is going down, and we are likely to see unprecedented strain really on our defense budget in the next few years. Under these circumstances, don't we have to change the rules of the game?
We must change the rules of the game that we emerge stronger, not weaker. That is the challenge of leadership. It cannot be that you change the rules of the game because you accepted that we will be weak in any case. I don't think that should be the correct attitude. There is no doubt that we must cut all the flab which we can. And I think that's a process which is always continuous. But the defense sector is not a short-term affair. It is a long-term business. And therefore, if you do something today and change your policies like this, the GSQRs you're making today will actually come into fruition by an equipment being inducted in 10 to 15 years. That is the cycle. So today you're affected by COVID-19. Your geopolitical frictions are actually increasing. You need to keep the Indian Armed Forces prepared. And therefore, you cannot apply the same standard of cutting budgets to all ministries of the government and treat the defense separately, because security cannot be compromised. We were already finding it difficult. So to think that this will be cut is not a decision for the finance minister to take. It is a decision for the National Security Council to take, for the Cabinet Committee on Security to take, because they need to take a holistic view. For all that money we put into development can actually come to grief if at the, in their process, we neglect our security. I mean, this is not something, I'm not trying to trigger guns versus butter issue here, but to lose sight of security imperatives because we are lost in COVID-19 effect is a strategic misstep which we must avoid, because you can't recover ground so easily in this arena.
So, General, like you said, we can't really, even in this situation, decide, oh, we're just going to buy locally, no matter what the impact it has. We'll still have to buy the best or most appropriate equipment for the job. But we might have to look at our wish lists and take a hard look at them and maybe drop some items that that will have to be postponed for later. I want to ask you, General, are there some big ticket items that come to your mind which maybe we should postpone?
Yeah, see, this is a matter of operational detail that we would obviously have to prioritize what is already in motion. After all, we are not, you know, we have, let's say, the new aircrafts which we are buying from France. We've got tanks which are under order. We've got ships under order. So there are already, the problem is we already have committed liability. Firstly, we have to make sure that we can able to meet what we have already committed about. That's point one. We've got to find how we can do that. Two is, then we try to see and prioritize what is it that we want to put in front. And that's where the CDS comes in. And that would depend upon what are those elements of military power that India would like to prioritize. And that's a decision which has to take a holistic consideration about what is the state of our military power, how does it match with political objectives which have been given to us, where do we now put our money in terms of priorities. And that's what the CDS is supposed to do, because one of the problems in this area is that the Indian Armed Forces always, of course, they want the best. And every armed forces want the best, because technology matters. But in the special case of the Indian Armed Forces, it lacks political guidance about what it is expected to achieve in terms of application of military power and its relevance to political objectives. Take, for example, that if you expect the armed forces to be prepared and be ready to capture POK, then their dialogue between the CDS and the defense minister and the prime minister would be that, can you give us the resources? Of course, we can do it. But this is what the resources we will require. And it would be obvious that at this point in time, we'll have to keep that idea in cold storage. But we'll have to prioritize what we want to do. And as we can, as is obvious, our priority is about how do we strengthen ourselves against China. Because most of our military power right now is against Pakistan. So we need to shift that weight. And that requires political guidance. So in the absence of a national security strategy, from where political guidance would be derived for the RM to give his political directive to the armed forces, the armed forces actually decide what they want on their own by certain assumptions that they make. And that is why we are in this situation where everybody wants to buy anything, but it is not a synergistic exercise. And that is where the CDS comes in. So the CDS cannot possibly say the problem is with the armed forces and the GSQR. The fundamental problem is with the fact that the politicians and the political leadership has unable to give proper guidance to the armed forces. And that needs to be first filled in if you want to do anything else. Because without that guidance, then the three services are on their own. Then it's a matter of long shopping lists and then finding who can supply it to us. And then also being possible to push the file through a bureaucratic process. So there is a lot to change within the services, within the system of acquisition in the MOD. And more importantly, even at the highest level, where we need to have a national security strategy, which now is much more important because we have much less resources.
Yeah. So obviously, like you said, General, what we really need is a national security strategy. What we really need is reform inside. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website, takshashila.org.in.